Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Look at Donald Trump on the World Cup stage, glory hounding, photo bombing. My God, this guy is unreal. Read the room.
Well, let's start with the obvious. Great World Cup. I thought the championship game was not that exciting. Let's be perfectly frank. It took a very long time for any points to be scored, and it was a point. You know, I think that the third place game between France and England gave us maybe a little more excitement.
That was awesome.
But we saw the best of U.S. world soft power diplomacy on display. We did not see a mass riot. We did not see any mass incidents. There were not violence. There was not issues along those lines. It really seems like the people who seem to hate America the most are those within the country and not those coming to visit us along the way, because to all credit to the FBI, the CIA, every member of law enforcement across the country, that is a huge amount of work to secure a lot of sites. And there were no incidents whatsoever that we're aware of. That is fantastic work. And the U.S. looked incredible on the world stage. I get it. Donald Trump was up there handing out the trophy. That is his right as the president to be able to do so. I loved it. I had just kind of thought he might pull the ultimate Trump, make them all U.S. citizens and declare the U.S. won the World Cup. That would have been epic.
I think I have no problem actually with him handing out the trophy. I think it's a little weird when you try to photo bomb their team photo moment. They had a crop them
out of it.
Why
should you show up? Just stand in the back, fancy pageant posing like Tina Fey. You remember
what
that Tina Fey sketch?
What a try hard. What
no,
a try
I think it's cool.
Hard.
Also, it just means somebody didn't staff him and tell him what he was supposed to do. Like, this president do this and then walk off here. He just kind of walked out and was like, well, I'm going to stay here. This is my country. I will stand by.
I also appreciate the fact that we had a very global halftime show. It was the first time FIFA has done a Super Bowl-like halftime performance with BTS and Justin Bieber and Coldplay's Chris Martin and Shakira
and Madonna
to kick it off. And you know what? It's like, hey, not everything has to be politicized. Like, everyone can just enjoy the show and just move on. And, you know, I'm glad we have that. For at least the World Cup, where for once, by and large, politics was kind of parked on the side and we enjoyed the experience.
I will say that halftime performance, I was confused by the entire thing. I love that they did something different this time, but Madonna was pre-recorded and it's a halftime of a sporting event and Justin Bieber is singing Everything Alleluia, like a sleepy song. And it's like, come on, friends, it's a party. Let's have some fun here. Why are we slow and sad?
You got to slow things down so you can kick them back up.
That was the only song he sang, though. That was like his one song in the set.
That's the only one we needed him to sing. He showed up, he can... While everyone else is lip syncing and singing along to tracks, JB was actually singing, which I respect the craft and the talent.
I mean, it was a great showing by the U.S. across the board. And
be a believer, Aaron.
Well, he's Canadian, so I mean,
what do we have against Canadians?
Well, considering the smog in the air recently, quite a bit, if you ask me. A little fire mitigation would go a long way for United States air quality, because it was smoggy AF at the end of last week out here in D.C. I don't know if you were here when you saw any of it. It was crazy up in New York and in Philadelphia.
We actually saw it as we were flying away and we could look down and see the layer of smoke that was hanging over Washington.
So if you want to ask me if I've got a problem with Canada, sure do. Sure do. A little fire mitigation goes a long way. California can learn that too. That's a sidebar.
Maybe we'll send them a bill for our air quality problems.
Heck yeah, we should. And as we're talking geopolitically, we're talking about soft power. Now we're going to talk about military power and the continued conflict with Iran and Israel and the United States right now with continued U.S. bombings. We're on day 9 of U.S. bombings. And
since the restart of the war.
Yeah, I want to start with this. We have at least 2 confirmed members in the United States military that were killed in action and one who is missing as of this point. My heartfelt condolences go out to their family, to their everybody in their lives. That is an unbelievable loss. And we are so thankful as a nation. I am so thankful to live in a country where we have the bravest people who are willing to sacrifice it all for our country. And it breaks my heart that we've lost any service members whatsoever. And I just wanted to acknowledge that, because that is a tremendous, tremendous loss to lose anybody. And I cannot imagine what they're paying. One of them was 19. So as we look back now towards this war coming kind of back online, Secretary Rubio, you know, has really, I think, shown some really great leadership and strength in this. He said, yeah, the memorandum of understanding was great until Iran went against it and decided to start bombing in the Strait of Hormuz again. And they're like, all right, well, doesn't look like that. But Secretary Rubio did what he also did, always does, which is diplomacy is an option here. Iran can come to the table whenever they'd like, but we've all seen that they are not good actors in any of these negotiations. What say you?
I still think what I've always thought about this, which is this is a massive foreign policy blunder that didn't need to happen. When the president launched this war, when he instigated this war, which was days after the State of the Union address, an address in which he didn't talk about this at all, in which he laid no groundwork for the American people about why this needed to happen right now. He went out there, said, we're going to blow him off the face of the earth, and this conflict will be over in days. Like, that was the initial spin. It got to the point where Republicans were chastising Democrats for calling it a war, because this isn't a war. This isn't even a conflict. Don't use those words. And here we are all these weeks and all these months later, and it's a war again. And to the point where now Trump and Republicans are trying to get funding for it to the tune of billions and billions of dollars. And my issue with this is not the promise that was made to the American people. The expectations surrounding this have been disastrous. It was just a few weeks ago that Donald Trump was out there saying that this, quote, new regime is more easy to deal with. They're more sensible. They're more sane. They're more responsible. And now the tune is, well, they're acting irrationally. They completely blew up the memorandum of understanding. You can't reason with these people. We need to continue blowing them up. And there's only so many times you can go out there and credibly say, we've blown them the smithereens and completely annihilated their capabilities. And it's like, well, then what the hell are you continuing to blow them up? Like, what's there left to blow up if they have no capabilities? If you successfully have done what you said you were doing this entire time, like, none of it adds up. And all the while, the sticker shock of it all is, I think, politically incredibly potent and tough for Republicans to justify heading into the midterms, where, again, the price of oil is going up. A year ago, it was about $3 a gallon. Now it's creeping up to $4 a gallon again. Like, this is politically disastrous for Republicans at this moment in time.
I would say that I think that keeping the Strait of Hormuz open is going to be one of the biggest political calculations for the president in this. And I was watching a lot of reporting over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And people were saying, you know, this is kind of why everybody's avoided Iran as a conflict point, because it's a bit of a hornet's nest in the Middle East. And they are so unpredictable, and they aren't good actors. They will continue to do what they want as the largest state sponsored terrorism in the world globally, to try and maintain whatever semblance of power that they have. And I think that Republicans are best served at this point, one, acknowledging this is the thing that always gets both parties messed up, and I hate it. You got to acknowledge the reality that this is a war now, and it's one that was brought on by President Trump and his leadership. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure we have annihilated most of the Iranian Navy. I'm sure that most of their boats are sitting in the bottom of the ocean. But these are terrorists. This is a terrorist nation. And they will do whatever it takes to try and continue to have these terror cells that they funded to be able to, like, the bombs they're dropping in the Strait of Hormuz are done by rowboat. Like, these people will not stop to try and defend murdering Americans and shouting death to America. That threat remains real. I think at this point, it's harder for the administration to show the strategy on how they counter that, given how the starts and stops, it is, it isn't, what are we doing? And I think your point's right. The messaging around this the entire time has led to confusion, chaos in a lot of cases. What is it? How do we defend it? And I tell you, Republicans have just been kind of happily getting, for the most part, behind the president on it to say, it is a conflict, it isn't a conflict, it's a war, it's not a war. They kind of follow in lockstep on that. But there are some detractors in the party who are saying, this is what happens when you kind of kick that hornet's nest and say, without a plan, okay, we want to go in and do X. Now, the president has a ton of targets on board, right? He wants to hit their infrastructure. He's going to keep that pressure campaign up. But again, if the end game is non-nuclear proliferation, then that has to also come through diplomacy and conversation. And I think the president's calculation, it appears at this point, is to bomb them until like the bomb them into will submission until morale improves. Like
it doesn't seem like that it's moving the needle all that much at this point. Because again, this is why we always say we don't negotiate with terrorists they can't be reasoned with. Like their entire existence is predicated on them willing to blow themselves up to take one of us with them. That is beyond the point of rational, sane thinking. And on top of it, I actually think one of the biggest political losers, certainly geopolitically, but here in America, is Israel. We just had a vote the other week about funding with Israel, and we had more than 100 Democrats, vote against it, to the point where Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of the Democratic Party in the House of Representatives, sided with the minority of his own party on that vote.
Seems to be finding himself in the minority more and more these days of his party, huh? Doesn't seem to have much control over a man who wants to be speaker.
It reminds me very much of the predicament that John Boehner found himself in oftentimes with the Tea Party back in the 2010s. It's incredibly similar, to the point where you have a lot of candidates running on the campaign trail saying, I'm not going to vote for Hakeem Jeffries for speaker if we end up taking back the majority.
That was it too, right? Pelosi had that.
This is why Pelosi goes down as one of the most, if not the most successful leader in congressional history, because for all the bravado, all the words on the campaign trail people had, she was the leader for a really long time. Nobody wielded power as well as she did, in my opinion, for right or wrong, good or bad.
Yeah.
She was a force. And when push came to shove and it came time to make that vote, every Democrat fell in line, whether they've been there for 20 years or been there for 2 days, they all ended up voting for her. I don't think Hakeem Jeffries has that hold on the Democratic Party caucus.
He does not.
I don't think he in any way inspires the least amount of fear or intimidation. And again, I think that there's always that balance of being feared or revered that leadership has to balance. I don't think he has that at all. And I think it's going to be an incredibly tumultuous, if they have a majority. I think the same things that Democrats were saying about Paul Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, Speaker Johnson. I think you're saying the same thing about Hakeem Jeffries.
He's also got like a tougher path across the board right now. And it's clear that he's not the political animal the way that, say, a Kevin McCarthy was. McCarthy knew his members' districts, knew their propensity, knew how to get them to victory. And you don't see that same thing, even with recruitment of candidates by Hakeem, the way you did with Kevin. So that's why you didn't see as much of that. I'm not going to support McCarthy in a larger swath of the party the way I think you do for Hakeem. But speaking of Democrats and division, going back to the Iran-Israel portion of this conversation, there is certainly becoming a stronger portion of the Democrat Party that is anti-Israel and anti-Bibi. And I would point to Zoran Mandami, who has said, one, that Israel is not a country. It is an idea. And that he said that when Bibi Netanyahu comes to the United States, come to New York City for the United Nations General Assembly it's usually late September. And folks, if you've never been in New York City for UNGA, don't do it.
Don't go.
As if it's not enough of a nightmare to get around New York City. Bring every world leader almost into one area and then add all of their security and all of their black cars. It's an absolute nightmare to get around. But Zoran is saying that he's going to arrest the Israeli prime minister if he comes to the United States and to New York because of the ICC, the International Criminal Court warrant against Bibi Netanyahu. Funny enough, though, Zoran hasn't mentioned that he would try to arrest, I don't know, Vladimir Putin, who also has a warrant out from the ICC. So one, he can't do it. He doesn't have the legal means to do it. But two, it continues to show that really to say Israel isn't a state and it's not a country and it's an idea, that's a ridiculous notion. If you think that Israel is an idea, it's as much as an idea as France is. It is a real nation. It is a sovereign nation, and it should be regarded as such. And so now in Zoran's mind, and I think in a lot of the Democrat Party mind, he somehow now has the power to arrest a free leader of a free country that somehow now he decides isn't a country, and he decides that diplomatic immunity doesn't exist because he's going to do whatever he wants. We just need to, one, acknowledge how absolutely banana nuts it is to say that Israel is not a nation. That's insane. And for two, for him to decide that now he is Mr. Law Enforcement after he wanted to defund the police so he can arrest Bibi. Come on. I mean, I know
Aaron,
it's crazy town on a lot of
levels. Taking the bait. I love this. Look at this.
No, this isn't the bait, though.
No, Kirk, here's the thing.
This is not a political game. There are actual Jews in the United States and across the world who are being told that their nation, that the Israeli state that was founded
Aaron,
for them after decades and hundreds of years of persecution does not exist.
Every time.
That's dangerous rhetoric. And you either care or you don't. Don't call it a game because it's not a game.
Anti-Semitism's
on the rise in the Democrat Party.
Okay.
And here it goes. Try to defend it.
I'm not going to defend it. What I'm going to tell you is it's hilarious to me that after watching Donald Trump say insane shit for 10 years and the Republican, not you, but the Republican response has been, oh, that's just how he talks. Oh, he's just trolling. Oh, he's just owning lips. Oh, you fell for it. Oh,
he
doesn't really mean it. Let me finish. I'll let you go.
Dude,
let me finish.
It's not the same thing. We're not doing
It is exactly the same thing.
Not when it comes to the Jewish state. Not when it comes to Israeli people. That is different.
So what's the line? Donald Trump has spent years saying horrible shit about almost every demographic known to man,
and Republicans.
No. When Republicans get asked about it, they run away in the hallway. They say, "I haven't heard that yet." Oh, that's just Trump talking. It's okay. Don't take it so seriously.
Example,
you can't take a joke. There are so many examples, Aaron, and you know that. You're not stupid. You know that Donald Trump has said insane shit for 10 years now.
Unnecessary. There.
And to say like, oh, that Mandami makes the idiotic, which I can call it idiotic because it is a laughable claim that I'm going to arrest Netanyahu, is chasing a headline. He's getting people outraged. Fine. He's doing exactly what Donald Trump has been a decade doing that Republicans have applauded, said that's hilarious. Look at him own the lips. Look at the meltdown. Look at Lucy. Every time Jesse Waters does a segment on Fox News poking fun at him, it's the same thing. And why can't we differentiate the difference? Why can't we differentiate the difference between I don't like Netanyahu and his policies versus anti-Semitism? They're not the same thing. Those are different. You can be anti-Netanyahu,
right, but that's
and
not
still
what
say
I'm saying
anti-Semitism
here. And I'm
is
not
wrong.
Saying that. No. I'm not saying that here. So don't get it twisted. Let's be abundantly clear about what I'm talking about. Zoran Mandami said himself that Israel is not a country.
Yeah,
he
he's
has
wrong.
Talked about it is a country.
Yeah, he's wrong.
It is a sovereign nation with a military and a flag
and a sovereign nation. And not everyone who's Asian is a virus, but Donald Trump said it and everyone in your party laughed along with them.
Nancy Pelosi then went to Chinatown. Not everybody in our party, let's be very clear, then went to Chinatown and danced around to try and say that the virus that came from the virology centers in Wuhan, that somehow was not a Chinese virus, even though Wuhan is in China. But go ahead and try and circumvent the fact that this is this instance where there is anti-Semitism on the rise, where Zoran Mandami has continued to become a leader of the Democratic Party. And in this instance is saying that he wants to arrest a leader of another nation and that that nation itself does not exist and does not have sovereignty. That is very different. And so you try and sit here and do a whataboutism about what Republicans did or didn't do and how they did or didn't push back on Donald Trump.
Republicans have been the party of whataboutism for a decade. Why is it different when we do it?
It matters tremendously because there is a rise of anti-Semitism
at this point
in the Democrat Party. And when you allow that language to remain pervasive
I've watched Republicans alley by as racism and hate crimes have risen when Donald Trump gave very fine people to a bunch of idiots walking around with tiki torches.
We're not going to play
a bunch of people on America 250 walking around saying that the Aryan race is like, come on, man.
What?
We have watched racism and hatred and hate crimes completely go through the roof under Donald Trump, and Republicans don't give two shits about it. So I find it hard to believe that now that there's anti-Semitism, Republicans are all of a sudden so concerned and so worried about the effect of speech on action. My God, what the fuck was their defense when it came to January 6th? I mean, you cannot absolve Donald Trump of all the things he has said and done to inspire violence and then
here?
Say, Mandami needs to be held to this kind of standard.
No.
I just don't buy that. I just disagree.
No.
If it's okay for Donald, it's okay for Mandami.
I've disagreed with you on a lot of things, but I got to tell you, this is probably the thing I've disagreed with you the most about. And I have to say, Kurt, as your friend, I'm really shocked with the way you've spoken to me about this right now. Like, I'm actually a little bit shocked right now. And I got to tell you, we might disagree on a lot, but we haven't been disagreeable. And in this instance, I feel like you were a little bit. And that just...
I'm just disagreeing.
I got to call it out when I see it, bud. And I didn't...
It's not anything personal against you, but
I just think this conversation would go.
Standard.
All right. Well, then we can just put a pin in that because I just don't think we're not even going to disagree without being disagreeable here. I mean, you threw out at one point, Aaron, you're not stupid. No, I'm abundantly aware I'm not stupid.
I know you're not. That's what I'm saying. I know you're not.
That's an unnecessary comment, dude. I would have assumed that we could have had a little bit more of a conversation specifically about this instance without it having to be this big dog fight. And it was. And that's a little bit of a bummer for me, but oh well. So we can talk primaries now.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
We got Maine, South Carolina, and Michigan. All of which we are watching. Well, the South Carolina is different because of the Lindsey Graham situation. So we'll put that over there.
But why don't we start there, though? Why don't we start there? Because it is different. South Carolina.
Because we have the now senator who was just sworn in last week,
who Donald Trump has
now
Darlene.
Endorsed, Darlene, yeah. in that primary.
I find it very interesting.
And then just today, we've had another person enter the fray.
Russell Fry.
Republican Congressman Russell Fry. I mean, I think that Darlene's going to win this thing. You know, I mean, I guess we'd have the conversation whether.
So she's on Hannity at 9 o'clock tonight. And yeah. I think that this is going to be her announcement either way. Yeah. Does she want to run? Because she'll have, I assume, Senator Graham's team around her, right?
Yep.
That she'll keep that institution.
Yeah, that she inherited.
Not only the Senate office, but his political operation. Because remember, he was running right now. So if she has that and she has the president's endorsement, I mean, I understand why other members would try or other people would try to run in the primary. Absolutely, they should. Because you got to take your shot when you got it. It's like the Obama 08 thing. Right?
Oh, well,
you
don't South Carolina wait Senate seats don't come off open very
exactly.
often.
They do not come very often. So, like, you got to run when you get the chance. So, I'm fine with a good primary.
I mean, I think I saw Mark Sanford's name pop up, actually, too, recently.
It's funny how that name always seems to come back around when there's an election. And, you know, Trey Gowdy's name's been floated, too. There's a lot of people. And he has said he doesn't want the race. He's not going to run.
I mean, I'll admit, I goaded Mick Mulvaney on a text with our dear friend Blake Berman. Like, hey, Mick, there's a Senate seat. You're a South Carolina guy.
Do you have news for us? Is it going to be Mick?
He doesn't want the job.
Of course he doesn't. He's got a real life now.
I know.
But I think that one's the most interesting just because she could make news tonight. It's just like it's actually happening right now. This primary
do
is
you think out. Do you think that there's a possibility she says I'm not doing it?
Yeah. I do. I think there is a possibility because even as his sister, she hasn't been hugely politically involved, right? She's never
not at all. She's been very low profile.
Gotten involved in his business. The only reason I think she would is if she really felt that, like, Lindsey was somehow telling her, like, you gotta run, you gotta win, like, this is, you know, man, this is everything we've ever, you know, like, some kind of connection to her brother that really makes her feel like she has to run to do it.
Yeah.
But I could easily see her just the same say, you know, I've been praying on it, and I love finishing out Lindsey's term, and I'm proud to do that, but I'm also proud to move on. I truly could see her say, I don't want to be in the United States.
I don't want the gig.
She could be here for a week and be like, no, thank you.
You know what's shocking is that, like, we've gotten to the point now where, politically speaking, at least, like, a name like Nikki Haley is, like, not in the conversation at all, which, like, I 6 years ago would have been unthinkable. She would have been, I think, one of the odds-on favorites to succeed Graham.
And a little bit of that is playing into that. You've been seeing these influencery fights kind of in the news, right, about paid influencers. Have you been seeing this?
Yes.
So there's
yes.
a little bit of this paid influencer fight going on right now. And one of those fights right now is like, oh, there might be a paid campaign. I saw a tweet about it towards Nikki because there were a bunch of tweets at the same time that all came out essentially saying the same thing, which was like, I was really mad at Nikki Haley for running against President Trump, but I think she'd be a great senator. And I think
interesting. That sounds like a paid operation.
It was all a little too convenient. I can't confirm anything, but I've seen a little bit on it and it kind of jogged my
That's
memory thinking about Nikki. Yeah.
That's worth keeping an eye on. Well, we'll see how that plays. I'll be curious to see what the senator says tonight on Hannity. That'll be, like you said, potentially very news-making. It could have huge reverberations because one of the things as well, I know that, you know, for Congress, it's like, man, if a lot of Republicans in Congress try to move over to the Senate, like that creates bottlenecks and you know, counting issues, vote counting issues when we get to that point. And then we got
also, this is her first major interview, though. And
yes.
this is as much. So let's say she does decide she wants to run, and somehow this is a Hannity interview. Obviously, he knew, was very personal friends with Senator Graham.
Yes.
Like, this will be as softball as it can be. I believe that. Not in a negative way, but like, she picked the right forum for the conversation.
I have no problem with her having her first interview be with a friendly. That makes total
100%
sense.
100%. It's going to be a little bit of a tell as to what kind of quality candidate she could be. It won't be the ultimate judgment of it, but part of this calculation as well for her strength will be, can she be a good
Can she communicate effectively?
Yeah. And if you can't be a good quality candidate, it doesn't matter what
bit of that that's like, ooh, that wasn't that great, there'll be blood in the water.
Yes, exactly. So there's risk reward here, but that's something I've been keeping in line. And we've got a few more primaries coming up. Maine and Michigan, where do you want to start?
Well, Maine, it looks like there's a coalescing effect happening around Troy Jackson that's happening pretty quickly with even one of the other candidates, you know, effectively dropping out.
Did you watch the debate?
I did not watch the debate. Because
did you watch the highlights?
I would watch the highlights. I watch it on social media the way everyone watches debates these days. Mm-hmm. That's my way of watching debates.
No wonder Graham Plattner was the front runner. If that is the talent pool of Maine Democrats, holy smokes.
Yeah, well, you know, again, this is going to be a race. I've always felt that regardless of who the names are on the ballot, it's going to be fought on the airwaves more than in a debate style anyway. You know, and if it's just going to be the not Susan Collins, like, versus fill in the blank, which is kind of what it feels like to me, honestly. It actually reminds me a lot of the California gubernatorial primary that Democrats went through, which was like when Eric ended up going down in flames, and there's this kind of free for all for who's it going to be? Like, does it really matter all that much? You know, this kind of feels that way to me. I think the far more consequential one now, because I think Maine's going to become a little bit more sleepier, if anything, because I think Troy Jackson's a lot sleepier than Graham Plattner, certainly. I think Michigan is really the perhaps the most important primary that's going to happen in Democratic Party politics this cycle.
And I saw Elizabeth Warren just endorse El Sayed today, this morning, to put a little more weight. And that was after Bernie Sanders and AOC were out there with him over the weekend campaigning, an avowed socialist, a make-believe doctor, which I also really appreciate. But again, I think if he, and it's a statistical tie still right now, right? Is that where the averages are sitting?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that... If he, you know, Haley Stevens is trying to be the establishment candidate right now, you've got Elizabeth Warren and kind of Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders and everybody kind of against each other now in the Senate. And you got Gary Peters, the senator who's retiring, who's endorsed Haley, although he was not a very good DSCC chair. So I don't know how much. But again, it's that establishment almost versus that outsider. And Haley Stevens had that very weird viral clip recently where she got a weird accent and was like, and we're going to stick it to them. And she did make that awkward moment into a good yard sign. Like, I like a little bit of self-deprecating humor.
I love self-deprecating humor. That's, you know, the only way to turn a negative into a positive.
Yeah, because it was, you saw that clip, right?
Yeah, I did.
Oh my gosh, so cringe. But
they turned it into something at least usable, which I will
credit them for. She's trying to get some momentum going, right? Because there is momentum in the progressives. There is momentum within the socialist part of the party that they're going to try to overcome in Michigan. How do you think it shakes out? Because that's August 4th, right?
I think it's, yes, it is. And I think what's interesting is if let's pretend Graham Plattner didn't implode during the primary. He would have later on. But let's pretend he didn't in the primary. So he's sailing. He's going to win his primary, hands down, whatever. I think Al Sayed walks away with it. In Michigan.
Okay.
I think because Plattner imploded, it created a new permission structure for reevaluation of Haley Stevens. Stevens is the biggest political benefactor.
So the establishment can come back in, huh?
Because they, up to that point, they had no leg to stand on to say, this isn't going to work. Like, there's danger here. This could hurt our party. There could be blowback. You can't win. That doesn't happen. That conversation can't happen if Plattner doesn't implode. But when he does, it gives Democrats and the establishment a second chance to go, okay, hold on. Because Peters was like determined not to endorse anybody. You talk to anyone in this camp, you talk to any Hill reporter, and he was like, his team was fervent on he's not getting involved. He's staying out of it. And after Plattner goes down, Peters then gets on board with Stevens. Like that, like if Plattner doesn't implode, Peters does not endorse Haley at all. That doesn't happen. And so I do think that the closer that it is for and if that holds up, that's actually good for Stevens. because for a minute there, Syed had such momentum and nothing was stopping it. And he was just going to run right through the primary and coast. But now that it's tightened up, the tighter it gets and the longer it stays that tight, the better I think Stevens has a chance in just like a week and a half from now.
I think that's really smart. I think that's a great point. And you're seeing it more and more, though. You're seeing like Van Jones and David Axelrod and some of these Democrats come out and say, we've been demanded to, you know, to pay fidelity to this progressive socialist rise in the party, and our stand against it has been pushed back against. And now we want to do that again. Although, you know, the voices weren't quite as loud when Graham Plattner was closer to beating Susan Collins, defeating Susan Collins. I don't like to say beating anybody. I really try to avoid that when I can, when I talk. But defeating Susan Collins, Democrats were more than fine with the Nazi tattoo guy at that point because it meant victory.
And they were willing to sell out. They were total sellouts. I mean, I can say this is a different. They were total freaking sellouts here when they thought that Plattner was going to cruise to victory. And they were like, well, the lesser of two evils, everything that they have criticized Republicans for, Donald Trump, they were doing in Maine. And a lot of them, in my opinion, are all a bunch of freaking hypocrites, which is, again, nothing new. It's politics and campaigns, and that happens. But I'm not going to let that go without calling it. And I was never on the Plattner train, so I feel actually pretty comfortable being one of the people out there saying, like, yeah, the Nazi tattoo should have been disqualifying, which you wouldn't think you'd have to make that case in the Democratic Party at the very least, since that's what they paraded themselves as. You know, we are against those things. Again, I'll leave it there, but whole lot of hypocrisy there for a minute.
It wouldn't be campaign season if people weren't gross. It's just the unfortunateness of this industry. And we're almost done at the end of campaign season. I think the end of primary season is like September up in New England. We're looking at like early, which I could go on about how stupid that is and how late primaries only helping incumbents.
It's so late.
Anyways,
every primary should be done by July, in my opinion, but that's just my personal opinion.
That I agree with. And let's end on a very fun note today. Vice President Vance and Usha Vance, second lady, had their fourth child,
a boy.
Third, fourth?
I think it's their fourth.
Okay. I know Katie Miller has four, but a healthy baby boy. And I don't think that a vice president's wife has given birth as a sitting
while
vice president
in office.
In 150 years?
Yeah.
So cool. Look at this. I'm like growing families. Congratulations.
This is what's nice having vice presidents in office
that are young,
over the age of freaking 60, like, which I'm all for in general, man. I'll say I don't have a lot of good things to say about J.D. Vance, but I'm really glad he's under the age of 55.
Right. We have an 80-year-old president, and we have a vice president who he and his wife are having children and raising a family. I really wish that we had a president in the White House who, you know, was of having children age and raising a family and kind of living that, you know, that kind of, I love that. I thought that was so
I think it makes it incredibly easy to relate to when you are simultaneously shaping policies for our country, but also raising kids who are going to grow up in the type of policies that you shape for them. Like, you have a lot more skin in the game. Which, by the way, is what J.D. Vance was trying to say inartfully back on the campaign trail. Like, I know exactly what he was trying to say. He said it inartfully, but he's not wrong. When you have skin in the game and you have little kids while you are making policy, while you're on that, like, it hits differently. Like, that's an absolute fact.
Yeah. Well, that's it for today.
Anything See, look at that. Ending on up? Me defending J.D. Vance. Come on.
I mean, listen, I'm so good at this that I got you team J.D. Vance by the end of this.
I'm not team J.D. Vance. I'm
Seems
more team
like
Marco
I'm
going to
send
JD.
You a copy of Communion.
Oh, brother. Oh, bro. I was raised Catholic, so, you know, I got that going for me.
I was, too. Look at how that turned out for both
All
of
right,
us.
Guys. We'll see where we're at by the end of the week. Who knows what awaits us.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.